Good to have everybody here. We do have some college students with us. We have been studying a series of lessons titled The Battle of Origins. Of course, the origins, we're talking about the origin of mankind, the universe, basically creation versus evolution. This particular class is called God's Great Universe. In a way, it may be more of a science class than what we generally have. But who created science? God did. That's right. So we're going to study some of His handiwork. To me, I enjoy it. I enjoy space and those type of things anyway. But last week, we began talking about Apollo 8. We'll get to Apollo 11. Apollo 8 was launched on December 21st, 1968, and arrived at the moon 3 days later on December 24th, Christmas Eve. And the crew made a television broadcast back to Earth as they circled the moon. Up to that time, it was the most watched TV program ever. Everybody was glued to the TV sets. How many remember seeing that? Okay, a few of you. And some of you weren't old enough to see that yet. So us old folks got to see that. Pretty amazing. In 1961, John Kennedy, who was President of the United States, made a proclamation, made a challenge that the United States would land a man on the moon by the end of the decade. One of the reasons for that, because we were in a race with Russia. Nobody had really thought about space too much until 1959 when the Soviets launched a probe into space that circled the Earth. That kind of woke up the United States, startled us. If they had control of space, they could have control of the whole world. So we began to get serious about space. That's one reason John Kennedy said that. Let's get on the ball. Let's do something. And what's amazing to me that in 1961, the technology to put a man on the moon was not there. We couldn't have done it in 1961 at all. A lot of knowledge had to be gained in those next few years. One of those that helped us to gain knowledge, of course, was the Gemini program and then the Apollo program. The Apollo 8, as we mentioned last week, was the first time that man had left the gravitational pull of the Earth and was in the gravitational pull of another heavenly body. It was also the first time that man had seen the backside of the moon. As we mentioned, when the moon rotates on its axis, it goes such a speed that as it goes around the Earth, it's rotating as the Earth is rotating. So all we see is one side of the moon. So Apollo 8 was the first one to see the backside of the moon. And as they looked at the moon and they could see the Earth in the distance, these men were moved. And rightly so. The astronauts, probably being impressed with their view of looking back toward our beautiful Earth, sitting out in space and seeing the moon up close, began to read the first 10 verses of the book of Genesis. It was quite emotional for a lot of people. Yes? Okay. Was she at home or at her mom's? Okay. Okay. If you didn't hear, Jan Barth passed out and Morris had to go be with her, so hopefully all that will be okay. She had surgery yesterday in her legs. Okay. Well, let's remember her. And also, while we're kind of paused here for a moment, Fred's been working on the website, putting these lessons on the website. Pretty soon we'll have all of the PowerPoint lessons, if you want to go back and read all these lessons we've done up to this time. And also the audio will be on there. So if you get a chance, look at that. Our website is basically Hollister, Missouri Church of Christ, but it's condensed. It's Hollister, M-O, C-F-C, either .org or .com. It doesn't make any difference. But anyway, you can go and look at those lessons if you want to. Here's a view of maybe what they were seeing when they were in space. Again, first time that man had looked really back on Earth from this viewpoint. About 240,000 miles away from Earth. It had to be exciting, but I've imagined it's probably a little scary too. It's one thing getting out there, it's another thing getting back to Earth safely. Then on July 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong and Edwin Buzz Aldrin aboard Apollo 11 were the first humans to set foot on the moon. Remember, Kennedy had made the challenge in 1961. Finally, July 20th, 1969, they launched Apollo 11. The purpose, to land man on the moon. As Neil Armstrong became the first man to step on the moon, he said, "That's one small step for man, a giant leap for mankind." This is an artist's depiction of the craft that they went in. This part right here was the command module. This is the lunar module. This would separate right here. Buzz and Neil would be in this lunar module portion right there. Michael Collins is still up here in the command module. He would still circle the moon in the command module as Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong went down to the moon. These legs right here is what would be sitting on the moon, and it would hopefully be in an upright position, because when they got ready to leave the moon, there's an engine that sits right behind here, and it would jettison them back up into orbit of the moon, and then Neil and Buzz would rendezvous back with the command module so they could get back in the command module. And then they would jettison this module, and they would fly back to Earth in just that. And then when they got to Earth, the only thing left come back into Earth would be this triangle shape, right, the cone shape right there. This would be removed. It would be gone. And, of course, if you remember seeing the videos and the pictures, they come in backwards. The bottom part of this cone shape is what would be hitting the atmosphere. It had heat shields on it, so that it went through the atmosphere, it wouldn't burn up, because the heat gets up about 25,000 degrees. So it gets really hot. They have to enter the Earth at a right trajectory, because if they enter too fast, they could burn up. If they don't go in at a sharp enough angle, they glance off and go right back out in space. So everything had to be exact. How many of you actually watched Neil Armstrong step on the moon? Again, several of you again. Us older folks. 1969, if you stop and think about it, July 20th, 2019, next year, will be 50 years since that happened. That's hard to believe, at least it is to me, 50 years. But as we watched Neil step on the moon, we were in awe. And it seemed to be that everything went flawlessly. But it didn't. There were lots of things that happened that we didn't know about until later on. lots of things that almost caused the whole thing to crash. It says that 4 minutes into the landing sequence, this is after they've separated from the command module, and Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong are landing on the moon. You know, they had a computer on that spacecraft. Can you imagine the type of computer that was on that little spacecraft in 1969? This phone has more computing power by thousands of times than what that computer did on the spacecraft. It was pretty primitive, according to today's standards. But it still had a computer, and this computer was bringing them in to land. Neil and Buzz really weren't flying that machine as it came down. But then the computer read an alarm, which read 1202, 1202 on the display panel, error message. Of course, any time you're working on a computer, you don't want to see an error message. But nobody had any idea what this error message meant. Neil and Buzz had no idea. Commission Control had no idea. So they're all scrambling around trying to figure out what in the world this thing meant. But pretty soon the alarm went away. So they said, okay, everything's safe. A few minutes later, it came back. And then it came back with another code, 1201. So they were about ready to abort the mission because they didn't know exactly what was going on. Finally, somebody said that they thought everything would be okay. All the other systems seemed to be all right. They couldn't see anything was wrong with the lunar module. So they decided to go ahead and go forward. They also began to lose communication with the lunar module, between the lunar module and Mission Control. At one point, when they were about 100 feet above the surface of the moon, another alarm came on. Low fuel. As they were coming down and they were working on these alarms, they had been descending, but they really weren't paying attention to where they were at, and they'd overshot the place where they were supposed to land by about 4 miles. And so when Neil looked out that little window that he had, instead of being a place that was nice and flat, it was a crater full of boulders. And as I said, if they land that thing, it needs to be on flat surface because it's going to just jettison straight back up into space when they were through. If they landed on one of those boulders, they could fall over. If they did, they were stuck. Or if they landed on the slope of that crater, same thing. They may jettison themselves out and over the moon and come back down and land on the moon. They wouldn't get up into space into orbit. So it was critical they found a flat spot. And so at this time, Neil took over the manual control of flying the limb, the lunar module. Of course, he was a talented pilot. He had flown a lot of missions. And they said that he was always calm, cool, and collected. It's one of the reasons they had him on this mission. He didn't get rattled very easily. And so he took the controls and began to find a safe spot to land. When they got down to about 10 feet from the surface of the moon, they got another warning. They were about 30 seconds away from running out of fuel. And then luckily, it landed. Of course, when he landed, trying to think of where he said that. He says, Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed. Of course, I think we all heard that when we were watching it, because we didn't know all this other stuff was going on. We just thought everything was normal. So then they began to get suited up. It took them about 3 hours to get suited up. And they also have to get rid of the air pressure inside that capsule. You know, it's like airplanes. You got the cabins pressurized so you can breathe. Well, to open that hatch out into space, which is a vacuum, they had to get rid of all the air. So they did that, opened up the hatch, And as Neil came out, apparently his suit, his backpack, broke off one of the toggles on one of the panels. And it just so happened this was the toggle that ignited their engine to get them off the surface of the moon. But he was able to save the day when the time came. They were equipped with a pin. Because remember back in those days, I think it was maybe Bic or one of them talking about you could write upside down. You know, used to, if you had a pen, if you write upside down, it would run out of ink. Well, in space, there is no upside down. So you had to have a pen that was pressurized so it would write no matter where you were at. Well, this particular pen was called a Fisher Space Pen. And so what Neil did when it came time to lift that toggle, he took his pen apart, just like that, and took that little edge of the toggle that was still there and pushed it up and ignited that engine and was able to launch off of the surface of the moon. So as I said, they had lots of problems. Luckily, it didn't cause any catastrophe. The mission wasn't aborted, and everything, as far as we knew at the time, went smoothly. But this just shows how well trained they are, that they were. They were prepared for about everything. And so this was a feat of, to me, a hero. To be that far away from home, never been done before, and really not knowing if you're coming back. But they did. Well, they rehearsed on Earth a bunch. This is one of the things they were talking about, is they had gone over every scenario that they could think of, anything that could possibly go wrong, they would talk about it. Tranquility Base, where they were supposed to land, again, it was a flat surface with not any big boulders or anything. And then when they didn't land right where they were supposed to be, that caused a lot of anguish for their little while. But again, Neil kind of handled the whole situation. So it went pretty good. We're going to look at a video. This is Neil Armstrong stepping on the moon in July 20th, 1969. It kind of reminds me or realize again how grainy and everything these videos work. Remember, this is 1969. Technology we had in 69. You're trying to see a picture 240,000 miles away. Of course, they had the best of everything at that time, the best cameras and everything. When you first start, there'll be two parts to it. On the left-hand side is the original film, and on the right-hand side, they've tried to enhance it to make it look a little bit better, which they did. It improved it a little bit. But they're still, you know, it's black and white. It's still pretty light and dark shadows. But you can still hear them talking. You can still hear him stepping on the moon. Hit the button. There you go.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now. Okay, I just checked getting back up to that first step. It's not even collapsed too far, but it's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Reliving history, almost 50 years ago. As I said, to me, it's just amazing that we look at the technology we have now and think, man, if we could do what the technology we have now and go back and do that, it should be pretty easy. But like I said, back in 1961, when John Kennedy made that challenge, that technology was not there. It was created during the decade of 1960. And it all came together, the landing of that mission. Yes. Well, they didn't know the math. They didn't know if man could even survive that long in space. It's one of the reasons, you know, some of the first flights into space have sent monkeys up. But they didn't know. I mean, everything was new. And as you said, the math part of it, this was something that they really had to work on. There was a lot of trial and error during the 1960s. Some of the astronauts lost their lives. They had to try out different things, different metals and so on, different procedures. But yeah, it was quite an accomplishment. But it all comes back, all they were doing was using what God had already given us. We just didn't know it. The math part of it, like you're talking about. Those formulas are there. We just had to figure them out. Click on that slide. There you go. There's a picture of one of the first footprints of Apollo 11. This is another thing that they were concerned about. By the time they landed on the moon, they were pretty sure of what they were going to get themselves into. But back when they first started talking about going to the moon, evolutionists, thinking of millions of years, knew that dust was accumulating on the moon. And they thought maybe, well, if it's been there for millions of years, that dust may be so thick that when they land, it's going to just swallow them up. Well, you can see the dust isn't too thick. So what does that prove? Maybe the moon isn't millions of years old. It hasn't been there as long as they thought it was. But it was a concern that they had. It said that Neil's mother was more concerned. She thought the moon was just had an outer crust to it, and then when he stepped on it, he'd fall through. Luckily, he didn't fall through. Again, we didn't know. You know, all this was unknown. But the moon is very important to us. We go out and we look at it. Sometimes it's beautiful. It rises up in the sky. But we generally don't give it a lot of thought. But it does reflect light from the sun to give us light at night. You know, if you live out in the country, if you go out in the fields in the middle of the night and there's a full moon, it's bright. You can see the shadows of the trees. Now, if you live in the city where you got lights all around you all the time, you may not ever notice that. But if you do live in the city, get out in the country some night when you got a full moon. It's really pretty bright. It reflects quite a bit of light. Another thing that the moon does is it gives us our tides. The gravitational pull of the moon affects the oceans. Each day there are two high tides and two low tides. The ocean is constantly moving from a high tide to a low tide, then back again, and this causes the currents, and it provides oxygen and nutrients, which provides for life in the oceans. You know, we know that there are currents in the ocean. And part of what causes that is this right here. At one time, people thought the ocean was just stagnant, kind of like the water in a pond. It just didn't do nothing, just sat there. But the tides, up and down, is pushing that water around all over the place, causing these currents, which is good. For one thing, it helps air condition the earth, it keeps the earth kind of a somewhat constant temperature. But again, it provides a pathway for a lot of fish to travel around. It provides the nutrients and so on. And so it helps sustain life in the ocean, keeps the ocean from becoming stagnant. Here's a little animation. You can see when it's the new moon and the full moon, which is one's to the left and to the right, you can see the water there on the earth is pulled out quite a ways. So it does affect the water quite a bit. Of course, those of us that don't live close to the ocean, we generally don't pay too much attention to that. But if you're living in some places around the world, close to an ocean, you got to deal with it. Kind of a grainy little picture, but it kind of gives you an idea how much that water goes up and down. Part of the day, the boat's in the water, and part of the boat, it's on dry ground. So it's raising and lowering quite a bit. Again, that's pushing those currents, keeping that water circulating. So that's one of the things that the moon does for us. The moon also keeps the Earth tilted on its axis at 23.5 degrees. Now, the Earth doesn't just sit straight up and down, but it sits at an angle. And that's good. It helps us. This gives us our seasons. We know the spring, summer, fall, and winter, unless you're on the equator and it's just warm all the time. But those that live on either end of the planet, we have seasons. Here's another picture of that. Here you can see the tilt, this arrow right here, north. 23.5 degrees, 23.5 degrees, 23.5 degrees. So as it's rotating on its axis, it's actually staying tilted. Then what happens, those of us in the northern hemisphere, which is where we are about right there. Not quite fall yet, or autumn. We've got a little less than a month. On September 21st, somewhere around that neighborhood, we'll be right there. And we go through autumn, go to winter. But as you can see, the top part of the Earth is pointed away from the sun. So this causes us to get less sunlight. Also causes us to get less heat from the sun. So it gets colder. But while we are getting colder in the winter, guess what? Down south, it's their summer. And what this does, it provides a way for man to grow things. If we didn't have the seasons, if the earth just kind of wobbled around all over the place, if we didn't have a season that was dedicated, you would plant something, it may grow up a little bit, and then it would turn off real cold and it would die. But as it is, we plant over here in the springtime, let it grow, and then we begin to harvest. And then we're ready for the winter. So we have our seasons. Did that happen just by accident? I don't think so. Design is right. But what if we had no moon? Would it make a difference? Would we even notice it other than the fact we wouldn't have the tides and maybe not have as much light at night? Would we survive without the moon? Back in probably about 2011, I saw a documentary on the Discovery Channel, and this is what it was titled: What If We Had No Moon? To me, it was very interesting. In fact, I bought the DVD that went with that particular program and watched it again. But some of this information that we're going to be talking about is coming from that documentary. One thing you need to remember, though, Discovery Channel doesn't believe in creation. They believe in evolution. So a lot of things that they say is geared toward the evolutionary side. This is one of the things that they said. What would life on Earth be like without the moon? Well, chances are there wouldn't be any life on Earth without the moon. Life, if it had started at all, would still be in the earliest stages of evolution. Scientists use the latest computer simulations to show how an ancient rogue planet, Orpheus, collided with the Earth millions of years ago, producing a sizable chunk of debris that eventually became our moon. If that collision had never occurred, we would live in a very different place. Imagine a moonless weather report. Blizzards over the Sahara, floodwaters swallowing the pyramids, 90-degree temperatures in Antarctica. As the Earth wobbles on its axis, unsecured by the moon's gravitational pull, the polar caps would grow and recede at frightening rates. And without the moon, our planet would spin much faster, meaning 4-hour days and searing temperatures. Yes, life on Earth would be completely different if we didn't have our moon. But of course, the Discovery Channel attributes the coincidence that we had the moon in the right place, right location, and the right size to chance. Of course, we know that's not true. The moon not only keeps our Earth at a tilt of 23.5 degrees, but it also controls the speed of the spin of the Earth on its axis. And that's what they're saying here. If we didn't have the gravitational pull of the moon on the Earth, it would start spinning so fast that we'd only have 4-hour days. Right now, we have 24-hour days. So the moon does a lot. We need our moon. Not just because it looks beautiful. It has a great purpose. We would have 6 to 8 hour days if we didn't have a moon. The winds would blow at 100 and 200 miles an hour. This wouldn't be gust. This would be constant. There would be no seasons that we talked about. We saw the picture there where the Earth stays on its axis tilted. We have the seasons. Well, if we don't have that tilt staying in one place and the Earth's just wobbling all over the place, you couldn't predict what next day was going to be like. The tides would be non-existent. In fact, the oceans would be gone. Why? Because there'd be no atmosphere. All of this comes about because of our moon. And there would, of course, be no human life. We wouldn't survive. So thank God that we have a moon. Let's look at Jupiter for a moment. And one reason we want to look at Jupiter, because some of the things we just talked about that would happen on the Earth if we had no moon is basically what's happening on Jupiter right now. Jupiter is about 300 times more massive than the Earth. It's huge. Its diameter is about 10 times the size of the Earth's. It rotates on its axis every 10 hours at a speed of 28,273 miles per hour, while the Earth is rotating at about 1,000 miles per hour. So here you have a planet that's 10 times the size of Earth, a big old ball, and it is spinning at 28,000 miles per hour. That top is really spinning. The Earth, being a lot smaller, is just taking its real easy time, rotating around on its axis. The winds average 100 to 200 miles per hour. And the storms stay for long periods of time. You know, we have storms that it comes through, and if it lasts a long time, it may last a few hours. Then it's generally gone. On Jupiter, a storm comes up, it may be there for centuries. Here's a picture to kind of compare us with Jupiter. So here you have Jupiter and Earth. But notice this storm. If anybody's ever paid attention to a picture of Jupiter, you always see this. It was first noticed by mankind, by Galileo, about 350 years ago, when we began to invent the telescope. So how long has that storm been there? At least 350 years. Probably much longer than that. We have no idea. Here's another picture of Jupiter. Here you can see some of the bands going around. This is part of this has to do, or most of it has to do with that wind speed I was telling you about. These are just bands going round and round. Here you see, here's the storm. It says Jupiter's diameter is over 10 times greater than the Earth's. It has 300 times the mass. If you weighed 180 pounds on Earth, you weigh 426 pounds at the top of Jupiter's clouds. and Jupiter is five times further away from the sun than we are. So we mentioned before, if you went to the moon and you weighed 180 pounds, how much would you weigh? About 30. Less gravity. Jupiter has a lot more gravity. It is pulling down on you. So if you weigh 180 pounds here on Earth, you weigh 426 pounds on Jupiter. You wouldn't move. But there's another picture showing you the size of Jupiter and the size of Earth. Big difference. Here's an infrared picture of Jupiter showing you the hot spots and the cool spots. Again, everything's in bands because the thing's spinning so fast. Those clouds and gases have no time to really mix themselves up. They're just hanging on. Another picture of it. There you see the storm. Here's a little animation. Here you can see the different bands of wind moving around the planet. Some are moving slow, some are moving fast, some are even moving opposite directions. So as you went from one point on Jupiter to the other, you may be going 200 miles an hour that way, and getting this stream, you're going 200 miles an hour that way. Not a very pleasant planet to be on. And here's another picture of the storm, kind of in slow motion. But it's just swirling around up there. We don't know of any. Here's a kind of a picture of our solar system. Of course, on the left is the sun. You're seeing just the edge of it. What's that little dot right there? Mercury. The next one? Venus. What's that? That's us. Third planet from the sun. And then this one? Mars. And then there's Jupiter. What's that black dot? It's a shadow of one of the moons of Jupiter. When they took that picture, it was putting a shadow on Jupiter. That's one of the moons. And then you've got Saturn. Everybody knows Saturn. It's got the rings. This one? Uranus, Neptune, what's that one? Pluto. Pluto's been downgraded from a planet. It's no longer considered a planet, but it kind of shows you the size of it compared to the rest of the planets in the solar system. So that's our solar system. That's the solar system in which we live. Here's another picture that kind of shows us the comparison between the different planets. And again, look at Jupiter. I mean, that thing is just, it's just massive. You've got Earth, Mars, Venus, Mercury, there's Pluto, Neptune, Uranus, Saturn without its ring, and Jupiter. So these are the planets that make up our solar system. Here's the planets Earth and Mars. Again, comparing size. And the other thing I want us to notice in this picture, you know, we saw Jupiter with his clouds, and they're all just in bands, and the wind's just going both directions, just in bands. But look at Earth. The clouds just kind of swirl around and move around. And that's because we don't have the wind speeds like they have on Jupiter. What we have here on Earth is what we want. We want a little bit of wind once in a while, clouds kind of moving around. Then they go away. There's parts of it that we don't have any clouds at all. But this helps us to live. This is the planet Mercury. I know when you first look at it, you think, well, that looks like the moon. But this is the planet Mercury. It's the closest planet to the sun. This was taken in 2016. Says that the Messenger spacecraft says this is the most complete view of Mercury that's ever been taken. Mercury orbits the sun every 88 days. So its orbit around the sun is pretty short. 88 days is a year on Mercury. Mercury's slow rotation and its rapid orbit around the sun says one day on Mercury is actually 176 Earth days, because the planet is spinning on its axis so slow. It takes it 176 Earth days to make one orbit or one revolution. It says a month on Mercury is about 6 Earth months. That's how long it takes. Temperature ranges from a negative 315 degrees to 800 degrees, according to where you're at on Mercury. It has no atmosphere, so if you're looking at the sun, pointing toward the sun, you're about 800 degrees. If you're on the dark side, you're negative 315. So you got to take the appropriate clothing if you go there. The next one is Venus, second planet from the sun. It completes its orbit around the sun every 224 Earth days, a little shorter than our year. Its rotation is also very slow on its axis. It takes 242 Earth days to rotate once on its axis. So Mercury and Venus both are just not spinning very fast on its axis. The temperature there is almost 865 degrees year-round, all the time. It has gas around it, and inside that gas, it just holds that heat. So it's about 865 degrees all the time. This one you may recognize. This is us. We live somewhere about right up through there. Picture of the northern hemisphere. Of course, our Earth day is about 365.254 days. So a little over a full day. So that's the reason we have a leap year every 4 years to catch up that 0.25 day. Kind of keep things on track. Takes 24 hours to rotate on its axis. The axis of the Earth tilts at 23.5%, giving it seasons around most of the planet. The average temperature on Earth is 61 degrees. That's the average temperature. Or if you've got the North Pole, South Pole, you got the tropics. But if you take all the temperatures around the globe, it averages 61 degrees. Says the next closest planet to the sun, Venus, for example, is the hottest planet in the solar system, as I mentioned, 865 degrees. And Mars' average temperature is a minus 80 degrees. Again, it has a hot side and a cold side, but that's the average. Next one is Mars. It's the fourth planet from the sun. This is taken, it's a mosaic. We didn't have a spacecraft that went by and just took one big picture. They came in and just took pictures of it all the way around, and they compiled them together. Notice this gash here across the planet. That's the largest canyon of any planet that we have in our solar system. You know, we've got a canyon called the Grand Canyon. It's pretty good size. The Grand Canyon is about 500 miles long and about 1 mile deep. This canyon is about 2,500 miles long and 4 miles deep. Don't know what caused it, but there it is. So when you go out and look at the Grand Canyon and see how amazed that thing is, there's a bigger one if you want to go to Mars and view it. It says Mars orbits the sun every about 2 Earth years. It rotates on its axis every 24 hours and 39 minutes. Almost same speed as we do. The seasons on Mars last about 6 months. That's probably one of the reasons that men are looking at going to Mars. One, as far as the planets are concerned, it's fairly close, but it's also kind of in line with what we would be accustomed to, other than the fact it doesn't have a lot of atmosphere. And then the next one is Jupiter. We've already looked at that one. It's the fifth planet from the sun. It's the largest planet in our solar system. It's made primarily of gases. That's why it's known as the gas giant. And it takes about 12 Earth years to orbit the sun. So it takes a little while to get around. Next one is Saturn, sixth planet from the sun. It says this image is also a mosaic of 30 photos taken in 2008. Cassini, which was the spacecraft, was about 700 miles from Saturn when they took these pictures. Saturn orbits the sun about 10,759 Earth days, or about 30 years. So it takes a long time to get around. Its tilt is about 27 degrees, as opposed to our 23 and a half. This is also another picture that a lot of people maybe haven't seen. They first observed this in 1988, but they weren't too sure about it. But they got another spacecraft came in, the Cassini spacecraft in 2012, and this is the image taken from it. But if you'll notice up here at the top, what do you see? They had never seen anything like that. Generally, if the planet's spinning and the Earth or the atmosphere spinning, it's a circle. Here you've got like a hexagon. And so they were not sure when they saw those pictures in 1988 if they really were seeing what they thought they were seeing, but apparently they were. They're not quite sure what is causing that. They just think it has to do with the different layers of winds underneath in the atmosphere is causing this. But it's a strange little thing that maybe we'll have to go explore one of these days, see what it's all about. It says that says the winds are blowing about 200 miles an hour. This particular image here was taken July 22nd, 2013. It says that this area that we're looking at right there is about 20,000 miles wide, and this particular storm, or whatever you want to call it, reaches down into the atmosphere about 60 miles. So it's big. But again, why it's kind of at an angle, it's still kind of a mystery. On Saturn, it's basically made up of particles. They think that maybe at one time, of course, from an evolutionist viewpoint, is that there were some moons that collided, and this is the debris that's left over. It got into the orbit of Saturn, and so if you fly through those rings, you have to be real careful because you could get hit by one of those little particles and you're done for. But that's basically what it is. It's just debris. And then this one is Uranus, the seventh planet from the sun. It's an ice giant. It's full of methane gas. It takes 84 Earth years to orbit the sun, but its days are only 17 hours, so it's spinning pretty fast. The planet will tilt toward the sun for 42 years while the other side's in complete darkness. Then it tilts the other way 42 years. So you get light for 42 years, then you got darkness for 42 years. Then you got Neptune. It's the eighth planet from the sun. We don't know a whole lot about it. It wasn't even discovered until 1846. And then it was discovered due to a mathematical calculation. Alex Brovard looked at Uranus and saw some of the movement of Uranus and says it's something else is affecting its orbit. So there has to be something else out there. And eventually we found it. Voyager 2 in 1989 took these pictures. The temperature on Neptune is barely above absolute zero, which is the coldest that it can get, minus 460 degrees Fahrenheit. It is cold. Some of the winds reach speeds of 1,300 miles an hour. Again, not a very pleasant place to be. And it rotates on its axis about every 16 hours. The next one we'll look at is the sun, but we'll save that for next week. Let's go to our Heavenly Father in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day that you've given us. We thank you for the time that you've given us here to study your word, to looking at your amazing universe. We realize that you planned everything, that none of this is a mistake, didn't happen by accident, but it's put here for a purpose. We realize that we just know very little about the universe in which we live, but it is amazing. We thank you for your love and your concern for us, keeping us safe, watching over us. We know that this life on this earth does not last forever, that one day we will be with you in heaven if we remain faithful. We pray that you be with those that are sick that we've mentioned earlier. There are also in our bulletin that have different health problems. Pray if it be your will that you restore them back to their health. Also pray that you be with Jan at this time. So we're not quite sure what's going on, but we pray that what it is will be in your hands and you will take care of her. Bring us back at next point in time. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.